Hi, Paul Sykes, good news planet. I'm speaking to Steve Martineau. Hi, Steve, how are you?
Great, how are you, Paul?
Okay, good. Steve actually runs an organization, Friends Forever. Boy, that just alone is a gigantic, beautiful, wonderful thought. And right now, where are you located right now, Steve?
Right now, I'm actually in Northern Ireland, on the coast of Northern Ireland, and we're in the middle of a two-day training seminar for 30 young men and women who come from a variety of backgrounds in Northern Ireland, Catholic and Protestant, and some new residents to Northern Ireland, which would be Polish and Portuguese immigrants to the UK, to Northern Ireland.
Wow, this is very exciting. Normally you're here in America?
Yeah, so Friends Forever actually was started in 1986 when it brought over 10 young men from Northern Ireland, 5 Protestant, 5 Catholic, during the Troubles. And since that time, it's grown to actually serve over 1,400 young people ages 15 to 17, both from Northern Ireland, from Israel, as well as having a group from Uganda last year. But normally, the way our program works, it's actually a full-year program. And there's three phases. And very quickly, what I'll say is the first phase is a group building phase where these young men and women come together in groups of 10, split equally among community and gender, and they have a number of meetings where they determine what it is that they want to accomplish as a group throughout the year. And then the second phase is where they're in the U.S., where our headquarters are located, and that's what we call the skill building phase. This is sort of like a metaphorical life draft, where the group of 10 with their two staff live, cook, eat, volunteer, do public speaking, all sorts of community engagement for the entire 2 weeks together. So on an average of 2 weeks, they'll do about 40 activities. It's pretty much nonstop. They then take all the experience that they have in those 2 weeks around broadening perspective, identifying resilience, practicing empathy, strengthening communication, all to achieve impact. And what that means is when they come back home, that's their third phase, and that's the community building phase. And what they have to do is they have at least 8 meetings as a group where they identify a social issue or challenge in their community. It could be the homeless population. It could be sectarianism, whatever it is. The young men and women on their own identify this issue and facilitate a project which is going to, at the end of it, help address or resolve that issue in their community.
What was the inspiration to start the organization?
Our founder, who unfortunately is no longer with us, was actually the director of a YMCA back in 1986. His name was Bob Raich. And a local YMCA here in Northern Ireland had sent out basically a form letter to hundreds of YMCAs in the USA that said, we'd love to get these 10 young men out of Northern Ireland, this situation, just to get them out of the summer where it's most sort of violent here in Northern Ireland, just for a couple weeks. And only one man answered that call, and that was Bob Raich. So Bob Raich said, hey, we'll bring you over. He did that, and then he sort of rallied the community to make that possible, the community in the U.S., and something really interesting happened. Bob insisted that the group of 10 stay together the entire time, live together, and do all those sort of core things that we still keep to. But Bob also insisted that the U.S. community really play a role in the program. And the exciting thing that happened was the group that went home called Bob up, you know, a month later and said, this is amazing. These young men have been changed. When can we send the next group? But the more amazing part was that U.S. folks, everyday regular people, started calling Bob up, and they said, hey, when is the next group coming over as well? Because Americans are thirsting for the opportunity, regardless of their background, regardless of their politics, to directly participate in the international peace process. And Friends Forever, we realize, is one of the few opportunities they have to do that.
I applaud you. This is fantastic. It's very, very powerful work. Every one child to you, who goes through your program, you've changed their life.
It, for sure. I mean, you know, one of the challenges that we have faced, and it's definitely we've gotten better at it the last 10 years, is because we were so grassroots and volunteer-based for about the first 15 to 20 years, is tracking the progress that many have made. But I can tell you, for example, we have young woman, well, she's no longer a young woman, but one person who came in 1988. She was a person here in Northern Ireland. And the story that she has is she recalls watching on TV, there was a funeral for some Catholic folks who had actually been killed when they were at another funeral for people killed in the violence. And two British soldiers, entered into the funeral part, and they were set upon by the Catholics, and they ended up being killed on live TV. And this young woman, who was about the age of 14, wrote a poem about this. And, you know, then she tossed away the poem, and her mother saved the poem. And when this young woman came over to the U.S., the woman gave it to our founder, Bob. And Bob, unbeknownst to the woman, the young girl, brought it out, this crumpled piece of paper, and when they were at a Rotary Club, you know, a week later, had the young woman read it in front of the Rotary Club. The woman read it to the Rotary Club. The Rotary Club, of course, you know, applauded, was in tears, but it set that young woman on a path to overcome her fear of public speaking. She ended up actually becoming one of the partner attorneys in the largest law firm in Dublin. But also more exciting is that poem was used by Senator George Mitchell in the preface of his book that he wrote about his work to help establish the 1998 Good Friday Agreement. So that's just one small example of how what seems to be just a minor incident in a 15-year-old's life could translate into much larger impact, both for the young person as an individual, but also collectively inspire many more people to create positive change.
Steve, how did you get involved personally?
I was involved in various nonprofit work probably for about 7 or 8 years, and I had been in Boston and sort of got the urge, to be an executive director, not because I was interested so much in the responsibility or the power that comes with that. Is more of seeing how small ideas, like off-the-cuff conversations, you could take those and you could really stretch those into a larger vision or path. And so I was looking around and I was trying to say, well, if this is what I'm going to end up dedicating my life to, or the better part of my life to, where do I want to see an impact the most people? And for me, I've always believed, and I shared this belief with our founder, that oftentimes people in this world, regardless of the culture, will see young people as a problem to be overcome. They see young people as, you know, adolescents as a troubled time, a time that you just have to get through, that we have to cope with. And he and I both believe that actually young people are an underutilized asset when it comes to solving situations in the world, whether it be environmental, political, socioeconomic, ones surrounding conflict. And if you get to a young person when they're 15, 16, 17, you can not only start having them make impact immediately when they return home, because oftentimes when you're that age, your social network is at its largest and its most meaningful, its deepest. So you start having change immediately, but you could have change for the next 60 or 70 years, and it can end up being multi-generational change. So that appealed to me, as well as the opportunity with Friends Forever to work with other people who felt similarly to me, who are in the U.S., who, again, I said, there seems to be a real desire in this day and age. You know, a lot of us are jaded. A lot of us feel isolated. A lot of us, you know, throw up our hands and say, I didn't vote for this guy. You know, I don't believe in this. But I think on the whole, even with this very sort of vituperative and, you know, sort of angry dialogue that seems to be happening, the majority, if not almost everybody, wants to see positive change occur on a global level in this world. And again, we don't believe Friends Forever is the only solution, but we hope that the more that we can get exposure to, you know, programs like yours and other people, that we can inspire people either to get involved with us or to begin their own initiatives. You know, the more people that want to do this, the better. We don't believe in, you know, being possessive or just trying to say we're the only ones who know how to do it. You know, Bob was 57 years old when he began Friends Forever. And that's a time when a lot of folks are thinking, well, my opportunity to create lasting global change has passed. We're hoping people understand that at any point you can make a difference. So that's why I'm involved with Friends Forever, because I saw a lot of those opportunities. And I've been very lucky that some of them have come true in the last 10 years.
There you go. And does the plan to get this group all together around the International Bay of Peace?
It was. So we come over here to prepare all the groups that are coming over in October for our programs. For us, it'll sound very cheesy, Paul, every day is like an International Day of Peace. So it actually just happened that we were going to be here at this time, and it was easy for us to, we didn't have to put together a special International Day of Peace because we were going to be doing these programs anyway. And the exciting thing about this opportunity is, as I said, we have all the populations we work with, but we also have here with us a participant who is not here with me right now next to me, but he's helping running this program. He went through our program in 2011 as a 17-year-old Israeli, Jewish Israeli, in our program. And he's since come back, and he helps work with us now in both Northern Ireland and in Israel and in the U.S. So it's truly just in the small, you know, complex we're in now, a global enterprise of teenagers and young adults motivated to making lasting change in the world. It just happens that it's on the International Day of Peace.
Well, congratulations. Your website is what?
It's friendsforeverusa.org. We're also on Facebook at friendsforever.org. And our Twitter is at FriendForeverUS.
Two last quick questions. What's good news for you? I ask everyone that. What would be good news for you in any walk of your life, personal, business, anything?
Good news for me would probably, at this point, I'm really looking forward personally to getting a new puppy, hopefully. I lost my boxer a couple years ago, and now I'm ready to get a new puppy, I think. And professionally, I think it's our 30th anniversary. And if I were to hear from some folks that are listening to your show that they'd like to learn more about Friends Forever or maybe come, and we were actually just able to get a 2.5-acre campus in New Hampshire that's going to be our global headquarters, that if folks wanted to come by and visit that, if they were ever in New Hampshire, I think that'd be great news.
Where is that going to be?
It's in Durham, New Hampshire, which is right next to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and it's about an hour north of Boston.
Right. I brought pumpkins home one time from Portsmouth.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a pumpkin party with my daughter. Last question is, well, congratulations. That's fantastic. So that's going to be, this is your own facility that you have?
It is. So we were very lucky a couple of years ago. We were able to get on about an acre. We got one building that used to be a photography studio, a couple of floors. We were going to renovate it, and a farmhouse came up for sale next to it, and they were very motivated sellers, and they really liked our mission, so they really gave us a great deal. So we were able to get 2.5 acres right next to each other. And it's not only where we do all of our office work, but at that farmhouse, we have the groups come, the young people come. You know, we have satellite programs in Louisiana and also in Illinois. So we help franchise, if you will, communities all across the U.S. If they want to host one of our groups, we help set that up for them. But this headquarters in Durham will not only host these young people, but year-round we're going to be having international and national academics and scholars and youth workers and people who are motivated not only about peace initiatives, but also anything pretty much about making the world a better place. And I was pretty excited. Just last week, we had a couple funders step up, and they provided 45 solar panels. So we're going to be completely energy neutral. All of our heating, cooling, and electrical uses are all going to be powered off of the 45 solar panels.
Wow. Congratulations. A lot of good news. Last question, which I asked thousands of people, and because of our Peace Day outreach and so on, I've asked, what does peace mean to you? So, Steve, what does peace mean to you?
Peace to me is when I see in a young person's eyes the lack of fear, and it's replaced with empathy. And instead of, and I see them using the space that normally fear and anxiety fill in all of our lives, it's filled with strength and an understanding that they have a responsibility, and they happily take on that responsibility to help others who are less fortunate than them. So for me, that's what peace is.
Beautiful. Steve, what an honor to get to speak to you. Congratulations on all your good work, and we're here to support it. And thanks. I admit this all evolved, you know, sometimes you never know how you're going to meet somebody, but certain things are just meant to be. I was doing a show at Rabin Medical Center, and I was walking with Leslie Schwartz, and Leslie and I started talking, and her husband was there, and said, boy, that's Leslie. She's a real do-gooder.
Leslie is an amazing person.
And now our conversation, I'm going to dedicate to Leslie, because she stuck with our Peace Day events and said, how can I help? How can I help? How can I help? Told me about your organization as we walked, and here's the outcome. It's all pay it forward, right?
And well, I'll tell you one last thing is Leslie is actually very much responsible for us being at our new campus and for a lot of our work in Israel. So not only did she bring us together, she's been an absolutely amazing volunteer and board member. And I feel fortunate not only to know her, but now to know you, because I've been, you know, able to see what you've been up to, and it's really exciting. There's not enough folks doing what you do, Paul, so I appreciate it.
Well, the good news is that, you know, because of where I'm at and the position to hear what people are doing, I'm stressed out. I'm exhausted from so much good news. There's the good news.
All right.
There's billions out there doing good, and there's a few that can't communicate in a nonviolent, you know, not violently, mm-hmm. but most of the people just want to have a nice time and stay healthy and love people, and there's the good news. So thanks so much, Steve, once again, and however I can assist, as mentioned, we're here. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later, Paul. Bye-bye.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.